Good evening, folks. This is TJ from urlaw.org. I appreciate everybody being here tonight. We're going to go ahead and get started with our premium member call and webinar for July 30th, 2019. Tonight we have a very special guest who I'll be introducing here in just a few moments as we get right into that. But in the meantime, as we like to start every call, I'll begin with a prayer for those who wish to join in. In the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. Lord, thank you for the opportunity to come together with these folks today. Thank you for the opportunity to come together. Where two or more together, you are present. We know that you'll be with us and protect us as we conduct this webinar. Many of our people suffer from great difficulties in their lives, and it is our goal to try to give them the best direction we can so that they can empower themselves to lift themselves up with your authority. So we hope that they'll all remember to call on you to truly give them their real capacity and capability in terms of whatever they can do. I ask this in Jesus' name we pray, amen. Now, also, just a quick reminder, everyone, on these calls, we are not here to be your legal counsel, your legal advisor. We're here to have an open, fair discussion under our First Amendment right of free speech to talk about these issues. And it is our goal to merely give you a positive direction and give you the resources and tools so that you can help yourself. At UR Law, our theme is that you are law. That means you are the highest authority when you exercise it properly. You can do far more than you can do with a lawyer if you understand the basics of the law. So we hope you keep that in mind. We're not here to give you legal advice or tax advice, but we may digress into some of those types of discussions on a much higher level. A couple of just quick reminders. Of course, everyone needs to understand that part of studying whatever we're doing or however you're dealing with the courts, don't forget to take advantage of getting the How to Win Without a Lawyer course at urlaw.org/JD. And I also want to say I'm really excited. We've gotten a lot of testimonials this week, and I encourage you to keep emailing those in as you have successes with many of the things we've discussed. If you want to take a look at those, just go onto the website, click on the blog section, and there's a category you can choose, Success Stories. And click on Success Stories, and you will see quite a few recent interesting testimonies that have been coming through. So I know we're making a difference, but there's always more we can do. We're always striving to do better. Tonight, I want to introduce you to our guest. We're going to get right into this. And by the way, let me remind you that tonight's call is exclusively to listen to and discuss the topics of our guests. So we will not be getting to other discussions on other types of things that we normally do. We're going to keep the discussion strictly on this topic. So if you have questions, make sure they're specifically reserved for what John is here to talk about. Okay? That's what we're doing here tonight. So tonight we have John Darish of NationalLibertyAlliance.org. Now, that's a separate website that we're just friends with, and we really appreciate the work that they're doing over there. I've been actually a student of theirs myself, so I'm really excited that they're here. So John is a founding member of the New York Liberty Alliance. It's for concerned citizens from surrounding states who quickly asked John to share his knowledge and his plans for taking back our country. Now, as many of you know, we've got serious problems in our country, and a lot of it is exercised through the courts. So that's another reason we're focused on this. Now, John's group morphed into what's now called the National Liberty Alliance, and their website is nationallibertyalliance.org. He has over 7,500 members throughout the U.S., and John is here tonight to share really some epic news about what the NLA, that's what we commonly call it, is currently working on, and how you can become involved. Folks, I've been telling you for years, you know, these cases are not just about you, but it's about the next person too, and it's about taking your knowledge and expanding it upon others. And John has been a walking example of doing just that. And now there's a much bigger cause going on. There's some very very exciting things that you can become a part of, obviously to help yourself in your own matters, but also on a much larger scale. And believe me, we need people in every community to be participating in what John is going to be talking about. So, John, are you out there?
I clicked the button.
It works a lot better when I unmute you, right?
That helps.
You know how it is. You did get to deal with these calls, too. It's like, okay, I knew I forgot to push just one button. It's always the most important one. So, well, welcome. Thank you very much for being here tonight.
Well, thanks for having us. We appreciate it.
It's really an honor. And I've been looking forward to this for some time, so I'm glad we were finally able to get this coordinated. And so, John, I'm going to just let you sort of, while you're talking, I'm actually going to have your website up on screen for those who are streaming on the web so they can actually maybe even refer to some of what you talk about. But first, I guess you need to give the folks who are not familiar with National Liberty Alliance a little background about what you're doing and what you're all about.
All right. Well, I guess the best thing to do is to read a paragraph from the Magna Carta, 1215. And the Magna Carta really is the work of the very, very first recorded grand jury. I think grand jury has been around longer than that. But in any event, this is the first recorded information about the grand jury. They brought themselves together. And they said this in one of their paragraphs: if anyone has been dispossessed without the legal judgment of his peers, from his lands, homes, franchises, or from his rights, we will immediately restore them to him. And if a dispute arises over this, then it will be decided by the 25, which would be jurors, of whom mention is made below in the clause for securing the peace. Moreover, for all those possessions from which anyone has, without the lawful judgment of his peers, been deceased or removed by our government, we will immediately grant full justice therein. And I guess the main message to the people that people need to realize is that we have been robbed. We've been robbed of our heritage. We've been robbed of our liberty. And generally speaking, people do not know what liberty is. Very few people know what liberty is. Liberty is not the freedom to be able to travel from one state to another or to put on brown shoes or black shoes or anything of that nature. Liberty that our founding fathers fought and died for was liberty from government. And that's all government, even good government, total liberty. We read in the Declarations of Independence, for instance, whenever any form of government becomes destructive to our rights, it is the right of the people to alter government and institute new servants. And now that's from the Declaration of Independence. And this is precisely the focus of what we are doing today and that what we have been working for goodness, I think we started in 2013, if I recall, and building up ever since. James Madison said, the people have an indubitable, unalienable, and indefeasible right to reform or change their government whenever it be found adverse or inadequate to the purpose of its institution. And Samuel Adams said, the natural liberty of man is to be free, and this is key, to be free from any superior power on earth, and not to be under the will or legislative authority of man, but only to have the law of nature for his rule. And Thomas Jefferson, I'll just read one more, when injustice becomes law, resistance becomes duty. And that's where we're at. We are at a point where our government has become destructive to ourselves, each and every one of us, our posterity. We are losing our liberties, and we've lost a lot more than people realize. They have been constructing a statutory prison for us, both on the federal and the state levels, and the town levels, and the village levels, I mean, all the way down. We're totally controlled by codes, regulations, statutes, don't do this and don't do that. And none of them have the right to do that. But as long as that individual sitting on that bench believes that he or she can get away with it, and put his powers over you, and he's the servant, and, you know, we're supposed to have been the masters. And as long as the people sitting in those chairs waiting to be heard, for their case to be heard, gets up and allows this individual to make these choices and apply all these regulations and codes and statutes upon us, And as long as everyone believes that that is the law, then that is the law. And but as far as the Constitution is concerned, all of our founding documents are concerned, as far as the law of the land, which ultimately is the law of God, nature's God, these things are not the law. Only the law of God is the law. And everybody knows it's written in the hearts of men, you know, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not kill. We got the two great commandments. One is to love and love God with all of your heart and all of your soul. And the second is like unto the first, and that's to love your neighbor as yourself for the love of God. And of course, if an individual loves their neighbor, they're not going to injure their neighbor. They're not going to rob their neighbor. They're not going to do bad things to another individual. So the law is really, really very, very simple. It's not complex. You know, it's really maxims and really just getting down to the facts. The truth is self-evident. And when you have 12 individuals who are the tribunal of a court of record, looking and listening to the witnesses and the individual that's being accused, it doesn't take long for those 12 individuals from those different perceptives, you know, they're all coming from a different perception, it doesn't take long for them to come to a conclusion together and to realize what took place and what is necessary in order to restore another individual that has been injured by another. And, of course, the two great maxims of common law is for every injury there must be a remedy. And, of course, in our courts nobody gets a remedy. If anybody is injured in any way, it's the court that makes the money out of this thing. They make money by incarcerating people. They make money by going through the process. They make money by having a police force and a court system, and which is really a big cash box for traffic violations and things of that nature. And they make money at every turn with fines and so on. Maybe they'll seize the property of an individual, and all this goes into their reserves, whatever they do with it. But the injured party does nothing. But the biblical principle is for every injury, there must be a remedy. And it's all about restoring the injured party. It has nothing to do with you know, going to jail or any of those things. I mean, there are cases where people may need to be in jail, but generally speaking, that is not the case for most cases. And a lot of people that are in jail, as Judge Bork said, I don't know if many people know about Judge Bork. I believe he was brought on by Reagan, I think it was, and he was rejected. He was said to have been one of the greatest legal minds, probably mm-hmm. equal to Scalia. And one of the things he had said was the reason that 90% of the people that are in jail are there because they opened their mouth. Now, of course, that was a different time. To reject and refuse and deny jurisdiction to a court back in those days, you had a good chance of winning. Today, it's very difficult. It's like a chess game you have to play, and you have to move it from court to court. And when you get into the federal courts, you need to understand that, you know, they change jurisdictions, you know, like anybody else changes clothes. I mean, you could be having a conversation on one thing, and next thing you know, you're having a conversation, and you're in a totally different jurisdiction. And that is the nature of a federal court. So you have to be very careful and have to be very controlling if you ended up in there. The federal courts have no authority to write penal codes as they do in U.S.C. Title 18. The three concerns that we have, the three title concerns that we have that have been written on the federal level, and they've been written, two of them have been written lawfully. One of them, I have no idea how they even came about getting it into the system, but two of them were written lawfully but is used against the people. One, of course, is USC 18, which is where the penal code is found. Mm-hmm. And if you look into the jurisdiction, you find it's maritime law. And nobody seems to bring that up in court. Nobody seems to challenge the jurisdictions. When they come out after you for a gun charge or a drug charge or something of that nature, they don't have the authority. Now, of course, if it's someone moving drugs from state to state and maybe from country to country, that's a whole different ballgame, because they do fall under, at that point, maritime in the sense of moving through the territories and the seas and the waterways and so on. And that we can appreciate. But as far as the individual within their own state maybe having a weapon or maybe having some marijuana or whatever the case may be, however they got it, and the state coming down upon you, the federal government coming down upon you, they don't have that authority. As a matter of fact, the states did not, I mean, the federal government, or the federal judiciary, shall I say, did not get the authority to even have their U.S. attorneys to call for the grand jury until around 1970. Prior to that, they didn't have any kind of a statutory or regulatory process that gave them the authority to do that. Of course, in because we are a common law nation, and even people who are subjected to our law, maybe, and they're in at sea or whatever the case may be, and they're going to be judged on something, it's still a common law process. The only difference is statutes become part of that process. But the big difference between the way things run there and the way it should be run is the fact that the jury that is called, even though it's explained to them that statutes play a role in this process, but it isn't the law, and they have the right and the ability to nullify that that statute. They can turn and say, well, in this case, we think that's a little too harsh, or in this case, we don't think it really applies, or whatever the case may be. They could throw all the statutes out and work with the facts. And that's what a jury does, is works with the facts. We're supposed to be doing.
Theoretically.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yep. I don't know if we've really had a real true grand juries or trial juries in quite some time. So the problem is serious. The other thing is USC 28, which is the rules of the court. And if you go through that, they apply to all of the titles. They apply nowhere else. And since none of these titles apply to the people, because we the people never gave them the authority to write statutes to control our behavior, then these rules don't apply to us either, because they only apply to the statutory processes within those titles 1 through 57. The third problem, of course, is the tax court under USC 26. And that doesn't make – I've read through lots of parts of that and didn't read through any of it. I don't know if anyone could get through it and, you know, have a brain left by the time they get to the end of it, because it's so much – stupidity and more, it just doesn't even make sense, half the things that they're talking about.
Well, I always say, in terms of the tax code, the reason they call it a code is because they told you right up front, it's a code. You know, you have to decode it to even understand it. Yep, you can do that.
Well, code is supposed to be law, and statutes are supposed to be law, but the only codes and statutes that we gave them the ability to write is covered under Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. We've given them 18 powers, one of which is the power and the authority to write law for the other 17. And so, they can't apply this to us. And, of course, you have direct tax problems, which is written into the Constitution. We see it in a couple of places that they cannot apply a direct tax upon the people. So that being the case, an income tax is a slave tax and cannot be applied, yet they do and they get away with it. And it's very difficult to beat those systems, but they can be beaten, but it's very, very difficult. You have to understand what's going on. You have to maintain control of the court. And when I say maintain control of the court, you have to control, you have to have them on the defense, and you must always be on the offense. Every move in the court, you must put them onto the defense. When you find that you're in the defense and they're on the offense of you, you're losing, and you have a problem. And if you can't turn that around, you need to think out a new strategy. But you can beat all of these different things and always put them back on the defense, and you continue to be on the offense if you understand what's really going on, what are the jurisdictions of the court, the judge that's there, and making him to understand the fact that he doesn't have the power or the authority to rule over you. Let's take a tax court. If someone was to be brought into a tax court, one thing they could do is they could move it into federal court for cause. Now, one may think that they're already in federal court, but they're not. The tax court is so separated, it's a foreign entity. They rent the room, literally rent the room that they use in the federal court building. And they use the same room over and over again, and I'm sure they're pretty busy there, so they're doing a lot of business in that building. And then they hire out judges, give them a stipend, and also they'll give them a bonus if they reach a guilty plea. So what do you think the judge is going to do? So this is a major problem, but you are not in a federal district court at that point. You're in what's called the tax court. They refer to it as an Article I court, which is, it doesn't make any sense because there is no such thing as an Article I court. But nevertheless, that's what they call it. And, you're not in a, in a court of law, clearly. You're in a equity court, which is ruled by one individual called the judge. He's one jurist, bought and paid for. And when you challenge the jurisdiction of that court, they can't show approved jurisdiction, for it doesn't even have jurisdiction. When you go and read through it, there is no jurisdiction for this court. They do call it a court of record within USC 26, but even with that being said, that, of course, is a contradiction, because you can't have a court of record operating with statutes. It doesn't work. It's mixing the law of God with the law of man. It's oil and water. And so you challenge that jurisdiction. You can move it into the federal court. So you just get up and move to the next door, you know, next,
what if you're already in a federal court on a IRS criminal charge, something like that?
That's what I'm talking about. You have to challenge the jurisdiction of that court.
Right.
And the law says that once jurisdiction is challenged, it must be decided. So the other side has got to make an argument to show that this court has jurisdiction. And so if a judge makes a ruling, if you write a paper and show clearly that they don't have the jurisdiction, just to challenge, you don't have to prove nothing, just challenge the jurisdiction. Once you challenge the jurisdiction and you tell them, hey, you don't have jurisdiction over me, and then the other side doesn't do anything, you know, doesn't write a paper, doesn't respond verbally or in writing, and then the judge turns around and makes a decision to decide that they have jurisdiction, well, then it's time to ask for the judge to be recused, because the judge can only make a decision on what is before the court. He doesn't get the opportunity to fill in the blanks of what the other side missed. Okay, so what he should be doing then at that point, and Your Honor, you should be then ruling for me. I'm the only one who put forth the paper, challenged jurisdiction. They defaulted. They didn't respond. No one was proving it. And the law says that once jurisdiction is challenged, it must be decided. That's the key word, decided, which means both sides have to be heard and the decision has to be made. And it can't be done by that judge, number one, because he already, first of all, they prove that they're biased by making a decision before hearing the other side. That's number one. Okay. The other thing is they generally already believe that they have jurisdiction. So it has to be moved into a court of record in order for that decision to be made. And that brings you over into the next door, where there's a federal judge in the federal district, you know, and he's representing, of course, that federal district. And once you challenge over in that court, same thing follows. The other side has to write a paper. They cannot do it. It's impossible. So jurisdiction is one way. Challenging jurisdiction is one way to get out of that court. It's an uphill battle. They will fight you every way they can. If from listening to you and reading your papers, they feel that you really don't know too much, you're kind of just drawing here and there, then they'll railroad you, they'll just steamboat you and just keep moving forward if the judge feels that they're going to be able to get away with it. But if the judge really doesn't know who you are and doesn't know what you know, and you put out some good solid paperwork and you're very careful and you keep them on the defense, he's going to be scratching his head before he makes that kind of a decision. And you should have a good opportunity then to be able to get out of that court that way. So first order of business is challenging the jurisdictions. And of course, you know, look at again, you have to learn how the process works. A lot of people go into courts, they try to do things pro se, but they really don't understand the difference between law and equity, and they don't understand how they constructed all this stuff, and the processes of the court. Nor do they realize often that they move from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. So it's a big problem if you're not educated. And you're not talking about a big education. You know, we pretty much, on National Liberty Alliance, teach pretty much everything anybody really needs to know to get through these processes. And so that's how you battle it.
Yeah. And again, I stress to everybody that, you know, you might be relying upon an attorney to do this for you. Remember, they are defense attorneys. They're only going to play one side if they can play that at all. They're certainly
not
going to
play by the rules.
and they play by the rules of that court. Exactly right.
And we don't play by the rules. You will not get an attorney that will go outside of the rules, the title, and the rules of the court. They won't come out of it, so you can't win through them.
Yeah, you'll absolutely weaken your position, not help it. So, you know, this is why I've stressed for so many years that, you know, it's going to be up to you to educate yourself, to raise your awareness. But again, everybody, all John and I can do is lead a horse to water. We can't make him drink. Well, here, if you're looking, I'm showing you on screen National Liberty Alliance's website. There's a ton of information there as well. And, like, for example, I think maybe I'd like, if you would, maybe touch upon the three courses, two of which I've taken, one of which I'm in the middle of, and I think this is a good foundation for a lot of people to understand just how important it is to get back to your basics of understanding how our system works. Right. Can you tell them about your courses, though?
Yeah, well, we originally had three courses. You had taken two of them already, you said, and one course is a constitutional course, which was very, very simple and something we put up kind of quickly to get something out there for people to kind of chew on. And the other one was a civics course. The civics course is like 120 hours. It's mostly videos and audios that you listen to, and we ask a few questions, and you just keep moving on. But they're very, very powerful. It really explains exactly how we got to where we are in America. How they taken over this country, and have they destroyed liberty? And it also touches on common law, you know, natural law, the Constitution, and many other subjects. Now the other course that we put up, and once we put it up, we took down the constitutional course, was a course that we called Government by Consent, and that course covers the Constitution in a very, very deep way. You know, we get into the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and the Bill of Rights, and we explain how, you know, the Declaration of Independence is the foundation of our law. The Constitution is the framework of our law for our servants, and the Bill of Rights is the capstone that all law is interpreted by. And that's an important point. Every time you look at a law that they claim to use against you, you can defeat it just by using the Bill of Rights, because anything repugnant to the Constitution, to your rights, is null and void. So that's a key point. And going into any court also, there always has to be a sworn affidavit. You very rarely find a sworn affidavit, very, very rarely. And especially in tax court, you never find it there. And if you don't know enough to challenge and look for it, you know, you're going to lose in that court. What they will do is they will call, for instance, they'll do a lien and they'll call it a notice of lien, and that's their power, their paperwork in order to move it into the federal court by making the application of that lien. And there's a process that they go through to get that lien done, and it takes a long time. It usually takes them about a year or two sending you letters. And when people constantly fail to answer those letters, they acquiesce. So they're constantly acquiescing. Then they bring it to the point where they finally, they'll put a lien, they'll give you a notice of lien, okay? And again, the people acquiesce. Then the final on the notice of lien, they'll give you a 7-day notice that we're going to actually make the lien. And again, you acquiesce. You see, anybody, every time you acquiesce and you don't ask them for certain things, and not make an argument, just ask them for simple things that they cannot give you, okay? So they go through that process, and when you finally acquiesced at that point, now they put the lien on you. And then you go to the county and you try to remove it or do what has to be done, and they say, well, they served the notice of lien. But yeah, it's only a notice of lien. And everybody goes blank at that point. They don't know what it is. You don't know what it is. Most people don't know what it is. A notice of lien is not a lien. And you'll go into court and you'll make the argument and say, Your Honor, they just have a notice of lien. And the judge will look to the other side, and the other side will say, yeah, we filed a notice of lien in the county, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the judge will say, okay, let's move on. And you scratch your head and wonder what's going on. Well, what's going on is a notice of lien is their saying, and this is where the fraud begins, and this is where their problem begins. When you explain the fact that, hey, wait a second, I haven't seen any kind of a proof of claim, or I haven't seen any fiduciary authority over myself or my estate. And those two forms are called Form 56 and Form 4490. If you just Google those two forms, they'll show right up. They're IRS forms. And no court case can go forward, remember, without an affidavit. That's the affidavits they're claiming exist and has been filed and served notice to the county clerk that there is a notice of lien. And if you go down to the federal court where it has to be housed, and you go to the clerk and you say, well, I want to get a copy of the lien, and you give them the case number and your number, and they will come back and tell you there is no such lien. There is no Form 4490. There is no Form 56. Now you got them in fraud. Okay? And the one time I was in tax court, exactly what I brought up into the court, and I waved the papers to the judge that, you know, I saw no 56, I saw no 4490, where's the case? And didn't take long before we all left the courtroom, and a few weeks later I got an apology letter from the IRS, and the IRS saying that there was no necessity for me to have filed taxes in those years, and ridiculous things that no one would ever think they would get. That's how powerful that position is challenging that there is no paperwork to allow a court case to go forward. There must be a sworn affidavit. There is not an IRS agent in the world that will sign that paper and swear, because they know it's all a lie. You know it's a lie. I know it's a lie. You know, when they came out after me, they just saw a sum of money that went into one of my accounts for, and they leaned me for that exact amount, and they claimed my taxes were for that exact amount. So that was a fraud. They're trying to get me to participate, to come in and talk to them, to undress before them, financially speaking, and to agree to certain things and to try to get maybe $20,000 out of me for that amount of money or whatever the case may be. So again, you know, it's all a fraud. It's a game. The paperwork is not there. They don't have the power. They don't have the authority. They don't have the jurisdiction. And you need to challenge it, but you need to understand how to challenge it. And you need to be educated, and you need to be able to command yourself in that courtroom and keep them constantly on the defense. But that's IRS anyway.
Well, it's not uncommon with other things too, but that's definitely IRS for sure. You know,
every case must have an affidavit to make it go forward, and so the same thing, and every case must have jurisdiction. So those are the two major things. And if they're not giving you that, and they're not giving you due process, so you've got constitutional violations, you can make a federal case out of it, challenging the, you know, taking them in, challenging the jurisdiction, making the statement that they're denying you due process, that they've moved you into jurisdictions unknown. And all of that put together can get you quite a bit of money from those people.
That'd be a nice turnabout of fair play, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I encourage people, if you can, get over to nationallibertyalliance.org and you enroll there. You'd like a minimum donation monthly for participation, just to help support the website, just like our site. We have some fees for participation, and that helps us keep going. Any other particular areas of what you guys are doing that you would like to highlight? I've got the website up. There's just a ton of directories and subdirectories they can look into. I know that there's essentially, you've got a joinder action going on. Maybe you can describe that.
Right. Well, that is kind of the pinnacle of what we've been working towards. You know, again, we've been filing papers and in the courts. Well, we've been in courts longer than 2013, because we started with the committee man and started going to the courts there, and we thought we'd be able to move through the courts. We never thought that the courts were as corrupt as they are. I mean, corruption is in most, but we never thought how bad it would be. They're all corrupt, every single one of them. They all belong in jail. From the clerks to all these judges and magistrates, they all belong in jail. But in any event, you know, we went to the School of Hard Knocks. So we knew practically nothing, and we learned on the job, so to speak, when trying to deal with these things. So by suing, we were suing the state. We were suing the numerous entities and people in order to get back the elected committee men within New York State. And as time went on and we worked our way through the system, And we found out that of all the corruption taking place, the whole system was totally corrupt. We went after the seven heads down in New York City, which run the whole judicial, New York State judicial process. And it was around that time we discovered the United States versus Williams. And we were empowered by that, and we kind of changed directions. We realized that we had to first take back the courts before we could take back the political process. So we started studying on that. We went after those judges. We even indicted those judges. We formed a grand jury, and we indicted those judges. Those indictments still sit. They don't go anywhere yet, but they will one day. We have them on record, and we'll be pulling them in on the federal level probably as we put the finish off of this case. But we've been filing papers. Well, first of all, we knew we had to build an alliance, and we're building an alliance across the state. We're trying to get members from every county in order to really build ourselves up to have credibility. And as we were doing that, we discovered that we had more people coming in from other states than we were from New York itself. So we moved over and became National Liberty Alliance. And we understood, again, we had to build up to a certain point to get a reasonably decent amount of members involved that would be a jurist, and to make sure that we have a presence in every single state. We visited every state in the union, not myself directly. I did a lot of traveling myself, but we had a lot of people moving throughout the states, introducing the common law back into the system, and laying out that the justice system is falling apart. And it's been almost unanimous, and every time we had any kind of an affair opening up to discuss the matters and get the people to get on board and say, yeah, we want to bring back the common law. And once in a while, of course, we'd have the enemy would creep in, and we'd have one vote against the many. But generally speaking, it was very very successful. And once we went through all of the states, and people started to move through their counties, but we were able to come to a point where we said that the people, there are people in all the states collectively working together, and we want to bring back the common law. So we have... We put it together, we called it constituted counties. We have constituted every single county in America, 3,134 I think it is, and looking at the website it says 33. That could move around because sometimes counties disappear and a new county pops up in those very, very rural places. You go up into Maine or Montana or up into even Washington or Oregon, you know, a lot of places out west, you know, in any event. So. Mm-hmm. 3,134 counties was the count when we started, and we reconstituted every one of those counties. In other words, we visited every county. Not personally me, but our membership across the United States. Sometimes a lot of places, especially rural places, we'd do two or three or four counties at a time. We'd find an agreeable location that people can get to and close to the counties that we're trying to reconstitute. So we did that work, and that kept people busy. It kept them focused. It got them to the point where as they were going through, they were becoming educated, and we were building up our structure, really. Until we got to the point where we realized, well, okay, now it's time to start filing papers or serving papers. So we started serving papers. We served, goodness, I think about 16 or 17 papers on all of government at every level, from the federal all the way down to the county. We didn't go into the the towns and so on, but down into the state, let's say the state level. And so we sent papers out notifying them of subversion by enemies, both foreign and domestic. Then it was, I think it was, let me think of what it was. It was December of 2016. We opened up a court case, and they wanted $400. We denied giving them $400. They wouldn't allow us to open it up, so we gave them under $400 under protest, because we told them we're opening up a common law process. We're not opening up a statutory, an equity case, a commercial. I don't know if they understood what we were talking about or not, but we're not going to argue with them. We'll give them the $400. We'll get it back later with interest. So we opened that up, and the main purpose of opening that up really was a place where we could kind of store all of our paperwork. It's a depository. okay, so that we, as a grand jury, could work under the auspices of a court, of the judicial process, filing all our papers, doing all our business in open, and sending a copy to the president, sending a copy to both houses and the Judiciary Committee, sending a copy to the Attorney General, letting them know exactly what we're doing. And every time we did an indictment, we followed up and sent it to all of them. And over the process of time, we filed, I think it was 186 papers up until just recently. Wow. This paper filing right now is referring back to all of those 156. And we're coming in with something a little new. We're filing a new kind of a form, which I'm not going to talk about at this point until after we actually make the filing. But it's a new kind of a form that we've put together to file into the courts. And basically, the end results of what we're saying, combining the depository, the place where we were putting all of our paperwork under the auspices of the court for execution at some point in time, I don't think they really understood what we were doing, but I think they now realizing what we're doing. When we go to get that paper, the next paper, they will clearly understand what we have done. And they tried to shut us down numerous times, but they didn't. We did indict those who tried to shut us down, and they kind of left on the wayside, and things are sitting there, but they're still taking our papers in that court. Now, the new paper we're going to file, like I said, we're going to file in a very unique way. It's historical. It's there's plenty of precedents for it, the process we're going to go through and what we've done is pretty huge precedents for it. And, but it hasn't been done in a long time and people have forgotten really. And, when we do the next paper, the bottom line is, we've been in court for 2 years, whether they like it or realize it or not. And they have acquiesced. They have remained silent. They had a duty to speak. They were under the law, and they were supposed to respond to our notice of subversion by enemies, foreign and domestic, at every level of government, and they just were silent across the board. None reacted, none responded, none did anything except Donald Trump. He responded. The only one that responded. He responded with action. Yeah, he's taken down the deep state, so he understands what's going on, and. And, you know, look, we met with his groups when he was going out west to deal with the Bundy thing to find out what was going on as he was running for election. And so he was out in Oregon, and we were out in Oregon, and our membership made contact with his, you know, organization. And we were working to do things with the Bundys and others. And then they saw our paperwork, they gave it to him, they went to Trump, and the word came back that Trump wanted to see our paperwork from that point forward. He's interested in receiving whatever it is we're doing. So we've been copying him for almost 3 years now on everything we've done. Every paper we filed, he's got a copy of. And same thing with the Attorney General Sessions, which now we're going to be sending the next paperwork to Barr. So once we file that next paper, it's really a conclusion of a case, to put it straight bluntly. We've been on trial for 2 years, they've been on trial for 2 years, and they've acquiesced all the way. And so this next paperwork is the pinnacle of what we've been working for. This is where we need the people to get to behind us. This is where we need to put the pressure on. We've seen Q throw out a couple of things that sounded just like us. As a matter of fact, not long ago, Q threw out this very statement here, and I want to read it to you. Okay. And this is the preamble to the Declaration of Independence. This is what Q put out. And Q used our words. We changed the word here in the Declaration of Independence, okay? And I'll show you the word we changed. We wrote... Whenever any form of government becomes destructive, and Q wrote the same thing, to our rights, it is the right of the people to alter government and institute new servants. That's the word that we put in there. Also, Q threw those exact words out. So we're kind of hoping and thinking, unless it's just a coincidence, that he's going to be behind us. I was on the Patriot Channel last week, picked up quite a bit members out of that, and when I was talking, I wasn't watching the board, but the people watching the board mentioned, hey, Q just threw something out, and he's backing up what I'm saying. So if that's true, also, again, that's a pretty powerful thing. That would be a shot in the arm. So anyway, we're getting ready to file this paper. We're looking for a critical mass at that point. We're looking for to push this through and take back our nation. And if people are interested in getting their liberty back and taking back our nation, seizing back control and consent of our government politically and judicially, then they need to get on board.
Excellent. Well, I'm showing them on the screen where they can go. If you go, actually go to the website. I know you need to get obviously become a member. That's how you're going to access some of these pages. I think they're sort of blocked out of some of these pages until they do a basic membership. I think
the only thing, we used to be totally open. We had no real private pages. But recently we realized that we need to collect some money somewhere. So certain pages which are giving out information we've been given for a long time for free, and it's still kind of free. If a person can't afford $5 a month, we let them know. We'll give them membership without it. I mean, there are some people, it's very rare, you get someone on a real tight budget, and $5 would be a lot to them if they're on Social Security, making minimum and trying to survive. So we will give that free to them. But there is a page, and that page is called the Due Process page. And when you go onto that page, we give a lot of information. We've created forms that people can use to challenge jurisdictions, forms that do a quite a bit of things. We also gave a free book that we wrote. It was about 90 pages, the book. And that book really lays out the anatomy of a court case and also teaches people how the court works, how it's put together, a lot of information. Our course is going to go a lot deeper than that. But we deal with people trying to help them to get out of the problems that they have, mainly by challenging jurisdiction. You can win almost any case on challenging jurisdiction because they don't have it. We have instructions and forms to move your case for cause, and we have instructions and forms to file a habeas corpus, and we also have instructions and forms to move to court for the enforcement at the end. We give information on how to write a notice and demand. There are 8 points on a notice and demand. You must hit all 8 points to make a powerful notice and demand. And then we've got a lot of free downloads of free information, including Black's Law 2nd Edition and Black's Law 4th Edition. Now, we've been given that for free for quite some time, and I was contacted by an individual who claimed they had the copyrights to that and that I had to take it off my site. So we took it down for a while, but I looked into it, and the falling away of that copyright ability was coming up. And when that date came, the next day we reposted it, and we haven't had a problem since because the copyright no longer works. I think it was 70 years after the death of the person or something like that. But in any event, we also have lots of memorandums that people can use in courts. We have memorandums on Title U.S. 18, memorandum on tax court, nonjudicial foreclosures, court of records, Article 3 courts, Amendment 10, Amendment 2, U.S. A memorandum on high treason, jurisdiction, natural law, jury nullification, jury tampering and stacking. I mean, it goes on and on and on. Pretty much any case out there, every jury has been tainted. And every jury has been stacked. And that's very easy to prove. In a federal level, it's very easy. You just go get their books that they give to the jury, and it just does nothing but taint the juries. It gives them information and tells them things against the powers that they have instead of for the powers that they have. So we offer all those things. And one of the things that you guys were interested in, I think, was the joinder. So with our joinder, we have instructions and forms to join out your case to the grand jury's action. We have done, I think, goodness, I'm just taking a big guess here, maybe 20 or so or 30 habeas corpuses. And we're going to indict all those judges that refuse to hear those habeas corpuses. We also have filed with many courts, about 40 of them so far, non-judicial foreclosures. A few of them are tax, but most of them are mortgages. They had no power, no authority. The whole thing was a fraud. And of course, you really don't owe anybody anything on a mortgage. And of course, tax on your property means you don't own the property. That also was unlawful. So those cases can be closed down. So first order of business is informing the court truth, and of course they will ignore it. That's what they have been doing. So we're offering people, if they want to join the case with our case, and at some point we'll make a decision on their case concerning jurisdiction and also restitution, at least to restore the individual back to their original state, and maybe some damages. And we're working all that out now. But what we do is if people fill out the petition to join their case, once we get that petition to join, we ask for a donation of $100 or more. Again, if people can't afford it, we'll do it for free anyway. Well, maybe they can only afford $50 or $20, fine, whatever it is. We need to be supported, obviously. So anyway, once the petition is done, then we file what's called an amicus curiae, which is a paper on behalf, as a friend of the court, on behalf of, in this case, of course, the defendant. And this amicus curiae is coming from the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. So it's coming from a grand jury. And you can write an amicus curiae into a court case that affects a large area. Okay, if it's kind of a case that affects a huge area or numbers of people, not just the individuals in that case, then an amicus curiae is the thing to put in, that could be put in. So we lay out the point that this is effective to really all the people of the United States, and therefore we're filing this amicus curiae. And in the amicus curiae, we challenge jurisdiction and we make the claim that the people are not getting due process in a court of law. And so those are two constitutional violations, due process particularly. Also carrying them away to jurisdictions unknown, which is U.S. Code violations under 18 and 42. Which comes with a long jail sentence for FBI agents, individuals, elected people, judges, anybody who participates in that process going out onto the highway, so to speak. I'm sure you're familiar with those codes, mm-hmm. and seizing the people and their property. And they also seize, all these properties are being seized under REM. So anyway, the amicus curiae is the first thing. They will default, okay? Maybe they're going to get a little wise when they start seeing all of these, indictments that we're going to be filing and the paper we're going to file and all the joinders we're going to file. And we're going to serve it to all 94 federal district courts. And we're trying to get people to work with us to get copies to the governor and to the both houses within their state. And even more if possible, you know, other levels of authority. Get to the sheriffs of this state and so on. But in any event, at some point they may start to realize that they need to behave and do the right thing and restore the individual and release them, cease and desist from their activities. If they refuse to do that, then of course we default them, we move it into federal court, and then we will make a decision on the case and put it out for execution through law enforcement. So that's
very well thought out. Very well thought out. It's amazing how far you guys have come. It's just, I've been kind of around on the side for a while, and it's just, I'm so excited. But I want to stress to everybody listening that you, as you listen, notice there's two sides of this. There's one, obviously, what you're doing for yourself, but also to really pay back as you go, you need to participate in the bigger picture in terms of what National Liberty Alliance is doing. They need you to join and be part of the committees and the grand jury and those kinds of things. And there are very real opportunities there as we begin to take these courts back for you to participate. So pay close attention to that. You really need to not just come and get something from us, but also to offer to participate whatever you can, at whatever level you can, either donation or time. That's what's going to move this thing forward. I mean, obviously John can't do this by himself, and he's certainly not doing it by himself, but you can imagine that if you want to build an army, you got to build an army. And if you want to get a long-term result, so many people I hear from all the time saying, I want to get the government off my back, and I want these people out of my life. And I said, well, then you've got to step out and do something. You've got to be different. You can't just be waiting for someone else to do it. And if you're waiting around for the government to do it, then you deserve what you've already got. Isn't that basically right?
Well, that's exactly right. And, you know, also there's opportunity here for careers, okay? If people are looking for a good career and something that's rewarding and stuff, this is, you want to get involved here. Because we need about 15,000 administrators for grand juries across this nation. Four administrators for every county. Now, we came up with that number by going to the Magna Carta. We go into history. And in Magna Carta, the layout was that if there was a problem and someone was being abused by some official or something, that they would dispatch out four individuals from the jury, from the grand jury, from the group of freemen. And they would dispatch four individuals to go to repair the problem and try to negotiate it and make things right. And if those four individuals couldn't fix it, then they came back to the 25, and the 25 then made a decision on what they were going to do. And, of course, as this thing progressed, you start to see then the jury process and how people are brought into courts, and it's controlled by the people. And that's another thing. You see, what people don't realize is that these judges are making rulings over us. They are our servants. How does the master permit the servant to rule over them? We are the writers. We ordained and we established this Constitution for them. They are under the Constitution. We are above the Constitution. The writing of a Constitution under common law is an unalienable right. Read the Declaration of Independence. It makes the point of government by consent. And also the fact of what our founding fathers said in the whole layout that basically the government is to stay out of our business. We don't want them to legislate our behavior. We're fine and capable of taking care of our own behavior. So anyway, the idea is four people. So we need four administrators, and those administrated would be the investigative body for the grand juries, or they would be the power and the authority to open the ways and gain the grand jury access to whatever it is that they wanted. If the grand jury wanted to go down to the local clerk, county clerk, or into some court, or whatever the case may be, and they want to look into computers and see what's going on, ask questions, they got all the power and the authority to do it, and it cannot be denied. And those who will make clear the way for them to do it would be those administrators. And so these people would be a paid salary, be full-time work, 40 hours a week. And they would orientate every jury that comes in. You get 6 to 8 hours to orientate a jury, which would give them the basic knowledge on how common law works. It's very simple, some basic maxims, and an understanding of jury nullification powers, and how they cannot be tainted by a judge. The judge is not to speak to the jury. Prosecutors also, they're not to taint and beat up the grand juries as they come in. They're to produce their case. The grand jury asks their questions, and they write their own papers. They don't write statutory violations. They write the violations of injuries of individuals, and they bring it and send it forth for it to go into the court. But you see, as four administrators, you have the ability to prevent all this from happening and fix the problem. Someone's having a problem with a bureaucrat, you make a few phone calls, and you can fix that problem just with the authority you have as the administration of the grand juries. And if they give you a problem, then you put the grand jury into play, and the grand jury will come and fix that problem. And if they can't fix the problem, you see, the whole process is to keep it out of court. Let's fix the problem. If someone's been injured, let's get them repaired, and the person who injured them needs the repair. And if they refuse to repair them and you can't get that agreement, then you send it into court for a jury decision. That would release a lot of pressure on the courts, a lot of wasted time, a lot of wasted money, and we'd get down to justice and not just the status quo. So anyway, we're looking for four people in every county. That's about 15,000 people across the nation. We're also building the political process back up to take it back. We, the people, need to decide who's going on the ballots, not the powers that be on the upper tier there, the elite. We need to decide on a grassroots level for ourselves who represents us. And that's the committee man process, a free and independent committee man process where the people actually make the decisions and decide who goes on to the ballot, and they get to decide, well, hey, you know, you don't know the Constitution. Go out to National Liberty Alliance, take the course, learn the Constitution, come back and talk to us then, and then we'll see if we'll walk your papers and get you onto the ballot. You see, that's the power and the authority of the people. That's government by consent. And when you send these people out into office, and they violate their oaths, and they start doing the things that they said they wouldn't do and not doing the things they should be doing, well, the two things that could happen. Number one, the committee man could decide to recall them and in 90 days have them out of office with a new election, special election, within 90 days. They can recall anyone, right up to the President of the United States. Of course, that would be really difficult to do. But, you know, as far as our representatives, congressmen particularly, or mayors, or even the dog catcher, it doesn't matter. You can remove them, okay, very simply and easily. Committeemen can do that. And on the other side of things, if they're breaking the laws and breaking their oath to the Constitution, the grand jury can indict them. And they'll be removed from office there. That's government by consent.
No kidding. Boy, if you just look around right now, and if your eyes are just burning looking at the politics and the people that are in politics and who we've put in positions of government, and you wonder, wow, it's just so bad. We have to do something about this. Well, we're telling you how to do something about it. But it's not up to somebody else to do it. It's up to you. And here's a chance in an organized way to help do something about that and take back your country. So I hope everybody's getting that as you're listening here today. So that's a very important message to get out of this call today.
Well, maybe people have questions?
Yeah, if anybody has questions, star 6 is how you get in our queue, star 6. Please, only questions for our guests tonight. If you're here asking some other question, you know, we're not here to drill down into the very specifics of your legal case, so we don't want to hear the whole long story. Just ask questions related to the content we've discussed so that we make this a productive conversation for everybody that's on here. So I'll get to our first caller. It looks like you're on the internet. J.L. Mont, I think, is how you're identified. You're up first. Go ahead. Are you ready? Well, we'll get back to him. We have one, the call says anonymous. I would appreciate, by the way, people, when you come online, if you give us at least a first name so we have an idea, but go ahead.
Hi there. My question, I'm assuming you can hear me okay, right?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah.
Or
my
John?
Question is,
mm-hmm.
You know, these processes take time, and being on the offense takes time. I just want to understand, how do we get to the end? How do we actually indict these people and execute? How do we get rid of execution? Would it go through the regular court, or would this require common law courts and judges and so forth?
No, our grand jury is operating within the realms of the court itself. We are under the auspices of the court. Everything we're doing is under the auspices of the court. That's the requirement put forth. Scalia, as mentioned, is one of the duties of the grand jury. You know, we had put a tent outside the court for the longest time trying to get in, and 2 years ago we did get in, and so we're under the auspices of the court. All of our decision-making and all of our statements and all of our paperwork is in a court opened. That's a court of record, even though they've attached a statutory number to it. We now, our next paperwork is going to force them into a common law number. We've even given them the number that we want to use because they haven't had an open common law court probably in 50 years or more. But in any event, we're in the courts, we're operating from the courts, we're making a decision from the courts, we're filing in the courts, we're serving it on all of the appropriate authorities for enforcement, and we're also filing it with both judiciary committees, you know, in the Senate and in the Congress, and also with the Attorney General Barr and the President of the United States. We've asked Sessions for, when Sessions was AG, we asked him to send us United States attorneys for prosecution. He didn't comply to that, but he didn't deny it either. And as time went on, we started to realize what was going on. You know, he was operating in stealth. I don't know if many people realize this, but Session has been operating in stealth. And even though there's bad mouthing, particularly about from the president about Sessions, that's all just a play. What's really going on with all the indictments that have been piling up over the past couple of years. Well, now it's time for the indictment openings and Barr's in place. So we're kind of hoping when we file our paperwork, and we're going to give Barr in a complete package of everything we've done over the past 3 years. So we're going to send them everything, and then we're going to ask him for U.S. attorneys. Look, it's a matter of time and pressure. Nothing is easy. Everything's an uphill battle. These people have spent 200 years constructing their web of deceit, their web of statutory prisons, and taking over our nation at every single level, right down into the state. They've taken our U.S. Senate over. They've removed the powers and the authority of the states. Amendment 17 to the Constitution took away the sovereignty of the state. The 16th Amendment of the United States and the 14th Amendment took away the sovereignty of the people and enslaved the people. That is the process. That is where they have taken us. We are revealing the fraud. We're showing the you know, truth is undeniable when you lay truth out. When you read our paperwork, it's so overwhelmingly filled with truth and just dripping with power and authority of the people. It's undeniable. Truth is just obvious. And that's how we're going to win. Now, it may take a little while pushing, but we'll push, and we're going to keep piling, and we're going to be joining cases, and we're going to be making decisions, and I don't think they're going to be able to do anything.
So concretely,
I'm going to get to the next caller, because we have several callers, so it's going to be one question per caller. Thank you very much. Air code 862, if you could go next, please. One question per caller.
Do judges have to have attorney license or law license, practice law on the bench?
I can't hear. You're speaking too low.
Sorry.
Get closer to your mic.
Sorry. Do judges have to have law licenses while on the desk?
No one has a law license. There's no such thing as a law license. It doesn't exist. The United States Supreme Court has ruled on numerous occasions there is no such thing as a law license. You can't license a right, an unalienable right. People have an unalienable right of defending themselves and practicing law, and you cannot take that away from them, and you can't require a license. Now, you do want to get someone's got an education, so they should have some kind of a shingle or some kind of proof of abilities of whatever it is they're doing. You also got to understand, for instance, that U.S. codes, there are 57 U.S. codes. Half of those 57 U.S. codes is actual law. It's called positive law. It's executable in a court of, in an equity court. And they'll call that a court of justice, and it is proper for them to do what they have to do, because really, you know, these titles, they each one of these titles do have a purpose. And again, we gave them the authority of each one of those titles in Article 8, in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. And give you, for instance, USC Title 26, that governs Homeland Security. And inside that title is all the necessary statute codes and regulations to control that agency, that entity. USC Title 7 is agriculture. USC Title 14 is the Coast Guard. US Title 17 is copyrights. US Title 23 is highways. US Title 31 is money and financing. Title 46 is shipping. Title 45 is railroads. Title 52 is voting and the elections. 55 is the environment. 56, wildlife. 57, small business. You see, all of these titles are lawful. And they have their own jurisdiction, and they have and we authorize them to do it. But the people, we don't have any business to be in any of these titles, or for any of these titles to be applied upon us, like they do with USC 18, which is crimes and criminal procedures. Okay, but the crimes and criminal procedures is for maritime. Okay, it's not the law of the land; it's the law of the sea, and it's being applied on the people since at least 1970. And so really you have lawyers that work there and they're experts in different titles. Some of these titles are, you know, 1,000, 10,000 pages. Okay. I don't know. I think the only one up to 10,000 really is USC 26. But, you know, a lot of them are 1,000 pages, 800 pages of law, of statutes, of regulations. And we do need people who are learned in those areas, that particular expertise, in order to execute the process of law, whether they're prosecuting or whether they're defending. And so all of that is good stuff. It's okay. Do they need a license to do that? Absolutely not. They don't need a license, but they certainly need some kind of credentials. They need the ability to, and you'd know real quick, and it's right for the court to require these attorneys or judge or lawyers, whatever you want to call them, to have the proper credentials, and that's okay. But when it comes to a court of law, lawyers should keep out. Look, this is all, it's not that a lawyer can't go in there, because we have a right to counsel, and it could be a right to counsel from a lawyer, a right to counsel for someone who's practicing, or anybody. You can counsel with anybody. It's your right to counsel, not right to represented by a lawyer, because a court of law is really about the facts. Come tell your story. Let's get the witnesses in. Let them tell their story, and the jury listens. It's all about the facts. It doesn't take much. The people are good at this. After all, it's our peers. We're doing business with the same people that would be judging us. We may not personally know them, but they're from our community. And if we do know them, of course, they shouldn't be judging us. But, you know, they're from our community. They know the game. They come from the same environment. They know right from wrong. They know the mercy is necessary for something here or there, because they're in the game, so to speak. And that's the other thing what common law gives. At the end of the day, the trial jury needs to appreciate one more thing, and that is, should we consider mercy? And the answer may be no, and that's okay, but the question has to be asked and considered by the whole, you know, all 12 jurors. Should we give mercy? But remember, the whole thing is about restoring the injured party. That's the key thing. It's not about putting people in jail. And in God's law, it's not just restoring the injured party, it's also restoring the individual who assaulted the other individual. And by doing the process of forcing the individual, bringing the individual to justice, to repay and repair the individual that they injured, which is usually with money, but in any event, to repair the person that they've injured, okay, there's a relationship, and we're looking really to heal both sides and make this person back someone who wants to come back into society and be a good human being. And that's what common law is all about. It's a restoration, both sides.
Maybe I want to ask you one question, because I think you rattled through a pretty long list of titles that are positive law versus non-positive. And I think you slipped in Title 26 as being positive. Isn't that one of those that's not positive?
No, I didn't say Internal Revenue Title 26. Definitely didn't go there. Just 26.
Yeah. No.
It's the only titles that doesn't even have a jurisdiction. Okay? If you look for the jurisdiction, there is. All other places, they have jurisdiction. It's administrative or it's judicial. Okay? You know, if it's in a court of law, there are 26.
We're picking up a lot of wind from you or something.
Not me. Someone else. I hear it too.
Yeah. Hang on. Let me get it must be.
Yeah, I hear.
Hang on, I'm going to try. I see which one's giving me all that noise. There we go.
Now,
you can go back and start that again. I'm sorry. It was just covering it.
I didn't add in 26. Maybe I said 26 and gave it a different wording, but I definitely didn't say it.
I thought that was a maybe. Okay.
Oh, no. The Homeland Security was Title 6.
Six. Okay. It just sounded like 26 to me, and I wanted to be clear.
And so all those titles, half of them are what's called positive law, okay, which means that it's an equity court of justice, all right, and some penalties could be applied there. The other ones are administrative, and it's a different kind of penalties. But if it's criminal in a positive law, they have to have a jury, and the jury has to have the knowledge of the fact that they can ignore the law if they want, you know. They also have to understand that these people came in to do the business of whatever it is, Homeland Security, banks and banking fences, highways, whatever it is. Okay, they came into the game, they're getting paid, they've been empowered with certain authorities, and they fall under a certain, restrictions in certain areas and requirements and penalties should they, abuse their authority. And everybody understands that, and people will understand that, and therefore, you know, the legislator has set forth certain rules and requirements and penalties and stuff, and the jury has to consider that and maybe go along with them. Maybe the jury wants to be more harsh than what the legislators have put forward. Or maybe the jury wants to be much softer. Maybe the jury wants to throw some of these things totally out of this case. It's all up to the people, because, you see, the people are the boss. We're the rulers. When we are in a court of law, the tribunal is the people. And the judge changes caps. He goes from a judge's hat to a magistrate's hat. There are certain people that are just magistrates, and they're supposed to be hearing cases only in law cases, and they operate as a magistrate. But all judges are also magistrates, so they can sit in a court of law and hear a case with the jury. Now, what the only power authority that the magistrate has in that courtroom, he's like a traffic cop, keeps things going, prevents arguments, keeps things on track, pushes the case forward, okay? And then, at the end of the day, he is supposed to exercise, on paper, with a seal, the will of the tribunal, which is the people. And then he is to exercise the justice, the execution of whatever authorities, the sheriff, the marshal, whatever job they need to do in order to confiscate, take, and to give to the injured party, or whatever the case may be, you know, the execution of the judgment itself. And that's it. They have no more business there other than that. And in our case, we're not even allowing a magistrate to come in. We're not allowing a judge to come in. We're going to do something different, and I don't want to discuss that at this moment.
Okay.
But be doing it in the courts, under the auspices of the courts, and they're going to have a real difficult time to resist us. Not that we're not going to get resistance. We are. And we're going to fill up the court with lots of indictments. But we, I believe, at the end is going to get justice. You see, the timing, most of us that are in the leadership of National Liberty Alliance believe that we're doing the godly thing, we're the right thing. After all, what are we doing? We're reinstating the king of the court back into the court. Who's the king of the court? God is the king of the court. Okay, they have removed God. They have tried to change his laws. The United States Supreme Court has made rulings in Roe versus Wade legalizing the killing of little babies, okay? Children in the womb. They've legalized abortion, okay? And that, they've stepped on God's toes here. This is, that doesn't belong in an equity court. The United States Supreme Court decisions is only in an equity court. They can only hear the cases of equity courts. And they can, the only other cases they can hear in courts of law is when someone else's unalienable rights have been abused in a court where they are then called forth in to say, you know, moving it into the federal court for cause is the term, which means there's been a constitutional violation that this court has applied upon an individual, and we're looking for correction because you're the boss of these guys. You're the one that has the ability. They all work for you ultimately, Mr. Supreme Court. And you're the one that makes the decision and tells them what they can do and what they can't do. And that's under American jurisprudence. And American jurisprudence is pretty much almost all United States Supreme Court decisions that are all right and just. Now, in a court, I lost my place where I'm at. But anyway, I think I answered the question, did I?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I'll get to another caller here. Area code, 312. I think I got you. No, hang on a second. I'm going to try that again. 312.
Yes, John?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Good. My question is once we go into these court systems and we have an individual, or we have the party that's injured by the individual has injured the party, or the court has injured somebody. Is this something that where we can be able to understand how we can be able to affect how we be able to handle cases between individuals? Like we have a difference between one particular individual to another individual, and that where we can be able to bring that back to where we have an equitable, a common law courtroom that where we can be able to resolve the issue in that manner.
Right. Well, look, here's the key thing. Our nation is as just as our courts are. And how we deal with other nations, again, is as just as we are through our courts. Our nation is judged ultimately by our courts, our justice system. Okay? And if our justice system is lawful, it is just, okay, then all of the people within the system will be reasonably just, even though as individuals, as human beings living your life, you know, they're sinners, we're all sinners, and they may do wrong or take chances to do something that they shouldn't do. But in their process of work, when they take that vow and they get in there to operate as a judge in an equity court, okay, then that judge, if we've got control, if we the people have government by consent and we have control and we're watching them like a hawk, they're going to do the right thing. And remember, all of this stuff that's going on, all of this crime and everything, it is organized crime, okay? It is RICO on steroids. Every judge out there is part of the game, and they're part of a conspiracy against the people to maintain the status quo for the big corporations and for the government itself and themselves. So if we bring this back down and take control of the courts, that kind of a problem is not going to exist on a high level. You will get a judge here or there or a person here or there that will break the law and do something wrong, but they'll get caught. If we're watching like hawks, which is what we have to do, the administrators are watching, the grand jury and the trial juries are trained to a certain degree, they're watching, and maybe someone in the court is watching and make the report to the administrators, and the administrators investigate and discover the crime, that whatever's going on with the judge and other people. So the point is this, if we have a just justice system, you can then trust the equity courts. Now, I was, my business, I'm retired from, I was a construction manager and a general contractor. And I always found it'd be a lot easier to go into a court, an equity court, and just argue the case with the contract, usually in a couple hours or a day or two, and it's done, you're out of there. And the case moves very quickly. If you go in through a jury trial, anything over $20, people have the right to go into a jury trial, which is a court of record, and then you can have the jury make the decision. Well, that's a much longer process and a preparation time, and the court case could take a lot longer. But court cases, even though they go on month after month after month, that's not the way our system is supposed to be. You know, the court case should go through the back and forth, the paper filing back and forth between the parties if they're going to go through equity. Okay, they go back and forth through paper filings, and then you take the paper filings, and then you make your case, and you come in for one day in court, and it's over with. Maybe two if it's a big case. And so equity courts are courts that are ruled by statutes or by contract. And so that's a good thing, and people should exercise them if they're just courts. Today, of course, I wouldn't even go near an equity court. Even with a contract, I would require a trial jury all the time. But once we get on the other side and the people take control and we have government by consent, then it's a whole different story. It's a new world at that point.
I see. So we're still not there at that point, but we're just working towards that.
Oh, we're getting close to it, yeah. I think by the time Trump finishes his first term, we're going to have that.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All right, I'll get to the next caller, please. That is, looks like, Demetrius.
Hey there. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, great. John, this question is for you. I'm Demetrius in Florida. My question is, you know, because of the system, the way it is, and there's been so many convictions and people have been labeled felons and misdemeanors, are people excluded from working with you if they have an unjust felony or misdemeanor?
No, absolutely not. Look, once a person goes through the process, let's look at the old Westerns. It represented reality to some degree. If an individual was convicted of something and went to prison, you know, they take them in prison. On the way out, they give him his saddle and his guns back. Usually the horse is dead, so they may not have a horse. But they'll get his saddle and his guns back. He's able to go be a person again, and that's the way justice is supposed to be. People are not to be, you know, under a situation where their entire life they can't get back into community, they can't get back and become restored as one of the people again, or dare I use the word citizen, but, you know, to be restored back into society. But look, here's the thing. Anybody that's been unjustly accused, whether the court case has come and gone, and even if a penalty has been applied and the person went to jail and they put some time in jail and they came out and they went through, maybe they come out of jail and then they have to continue under a controlled situation. You know, what do they call that when you have to report?
Probation.
Onto probation. Okay, all that said and done, the law is Okay, and this is the way it exists. If you jurisdiction can be challenged at any time, you can challenge a case 10 years later. I mean, it may be hard to deal with that case because there are a lot of facts and different things are gone, but not much, because all you do is go down and look at the records, and what you can discover is that they never had jurisdiction. And challenging jurisdiction turns everything upside down on its head, and a whole new process begins now.
Wow.
And restitution and restoring, they have to now make the decision whether they're going to open up another case and try to convict you inside a court of record. And then whatever the court of record would have been, the punishment which you've already paid anyway, if you've been in jail and probation and so on and so forth. But a court of record in most cases is not going to be open. Non-judicial foreclosures can't survive in a court of record, whether they're mortgage companies or taxes. Any individual challenge jurisdictions, okay, is not going to be lost in a court of record if they went into a quasi-court of unknown jurisdiction that operates under statutes, which is no court of law at all. The moment that the statute is applied, whether it's applied upon the grand jury or the trial jury, when it's written, you're being convicted of USC this, that, or the other thing, or some other code within a state, and so they're applying a statute upon you, and they call forth a jury, and it becomes a statutory jury, all that's null and void. They had no power, no authority. They shouldn't have done that. They do have a huge problem, and I'm not sure how we're going to fix that problem once we get to the other side, but it certainly has to be fixed. Because all of these things need to be addressed.
Well, I brought it up, John, because I know a lot of talented people that have criminal records, but they're very good people, and they would probably like this process. They would like to work with you.
Well, absolutely. They can come in. We wouldn't hold anything back from them. They need not tell us anything. Look, we're self-policing, too. We have a plan. Let me give you an example, okay? Let's say four administrators. Let's say you have an evil person jumping onto the game plan here, and they're doing evil things, and they're one of the four administrators. The other three administrators, realizing that they're breaking their oath, and the oath that they're giving is an oath to God. It's not an oath to the Constitution. We're above the Constitution, remember, but we do take oaths that we're not going to violate other people's constitutional or really unalienable rights. But look at the oath to God, and the oath to God is that we come with a sense of honor, a sense of justice, and a sense of mercy. Those three things are questioned on every action. Are you acting in it with honor? Are you acting with justice? Are you acting considering mercy at the end of the day in everything you're doing, in all people you're dealing with? Because remember, this position is a very powerful position, okay? And it's up to the four individuals to police themselves. And if one of them starts to violate, they have to be restored back into the system. They have to repent their ways, recognize it, and come back in and say, okay, I'm going to fix this problem. And if they refuse, the three can can the other one, and then they hire another person. Now, of course, there should be an appellate process because it's not really a court of record. So they can go to the county next door and ask for the administrators there to hear the case concerning the fact that I've been ousted, okay, and they can listen to the case, and they can either agree with the three or override the three and reinstate them, okay? But again, if the person violates again. But I don't think at that point you're going to have that problem because, you know, the truth is the truth. And either we're going to have a system of honor under God. We're taking oaths before God. We're doing God's business. We're proceeding, working with and for God on the king's bench. The trial jury and the grand jury is the king's bench, and the king is God.
Absolutely.
And generally, most people will realize this is serious stuff. And I'm not going to go up against God. Now, of course, you have some crazies sometimes, people whose conscience has been seared and stuff, and they're identifiable. You know, they'll be seen and prevented. Again, self-policing. But look, even if we have one problem here or there that escapes us and so on and so forth, look at all the injustice we have going. I don't think that little bit of injustice will last very long at all. I think it would be snuffed out quite quickly by the other administrators in the surrounding counties and so on, because we have to work together.
Thank you for that insight. I appreciate that.
All right. Thank you, Demetrius. I'll get to the next caller, and it's area code 914.
Coming out of New York.
Yes. Good evening. Yeah.
Good evening.
My question was, How does one bring a civil in or criminal complaint to the common law grand jury, and how do you invoke a court of law?
Well, look, we take on pretty much any case. There may be a few cases that might be reconsidered at this point, not taken on because of the hold, but we have to be very careful with that because we're about justice. We're not about politics or being politically correct or any of those things. But in any event, whatever the case may be, okay, the key thing is challenging the jurisdiction and the lack of due process. And every court case seems to lack that. And that's the unfortunate thing. And we have, first of all, look at that. We have a situation where we have a person who's going through a divorce, okay, and their husband is a very well-connected person in the community. And the court is just beating the hell out of this woman. And there's children involved, there's property involved, there's a house involved, there's a lot of things involved, and the whole thing is slanted. And what we have discovered that all family courts, all these courts that work through the process of divorce and the family court hearings and all that stuff, they're the most corrupt courts going. And they're the most destructive courts. Just think about this. If you got three or four kids and you're up in a court against one of your spouses, so you got three kids, each one of them gets their own lawyer, the state gives it to them, and the two parents get their own lawyers. You got five lawyers deciding on what's going on with your family, your property, and everything else. And they all want to extend this as long as they can so that they can take as much of your property away from you as possible. And it goes on month after month after month, year after year after year. It never seems to end until these children are older. And if there's a lot of money involved, and we were aware of a case that we may be assisting soon where an individual is like 19 years old, well, they're going to go after this guy, and they're going to let him go until he's 21. And even after that, they may go and rule this guy as being being deficient psychologically or whatever, so they can continue to take him even further. Why? Because he's worth a lot of money. That's why. And these are sick people in these courts. They have no compassion. They have no empathy. These are the people that need to be in jail. We need to shut them all down. These things need to be controlled by lay people, people in the community, decent people, godly people, people who take an oath to God. We can set up a system to train people for that, who have some counseling background and a desire to help people, where they sit down and they try to work out the problems with between the two parents that have children in the house and everything else, and maybe even, you know, requiring that they have certain counseling taking place so that they can work out their problems without affecting and hurting the children. You know, it's all something we got to think about. We haven't formed a plan for that yet, but it's something we've given a little thought, and we will exercise a plan because we have to shut down the family courts. They are the worst.
So if I wanted to, or one wants to invoke, if one wants to bring a criminal in or civil complaint to the common law grand jury, we would contact the National Liberty Alliance?
Yeah, you'd come on, come to hear some of our calls, you look at our front page, read through, watch the videos, understand who we are, what we're doing. And then if it interests you and you think we can be something that you'd like to participate with, you could become a member. Members give you access to everything but that one page that is have to be a premier member, someone giving $5 a month or more. And then you can join your case if you want with us, and we challenge the jurisdiction of the case, and we force them to cease and desist through an amicus curiae, and which is coming from the grand jury, and when they reject that, ignore that, or whatever, which at some point they'll stop rejecting and they'll obey when they start to understand what's really going on here. And if they reject it, in the beginning a lot of them will, okay, then we move the case into the federal court for cause. At that point it becomes joined to our case, and then the grand jury is the tribunal.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay,
so just get on over there, get involved in the site, become a member, start taking some of the courses, and kind of get yourself up to speed a little bit first. They have obviously some call replays, which it slipped me. I was looking for some menus the other day for it, and I realized it's right here under the tab for weekly call on the upper left. And then go back and listen to a few things that are going on. Get yourself familiar with it. That way you won't be a burden when you come in. You'll come in prepared. Okay?
Right. Right.
And there's one other point here. There's also a remedy for someone on the other side. Maybe the person bringing this into us is the abuser. Okay? We don't know. But justice has to prevail. If the court doesn't have authority, if they don't have jurisdiction, if they're statutory, then we need to shut them down, no matter what, no matter who the good guy or the bad guy is. But nevertheless, you see, the fact that we're moving in this direction also opens up the common law courts of no charge. No charge. There is no charge to go to court. And you don't go spend, a life's fortune to try to pay a lawyer to defend you. You actually come into the court and you can get counseling. You're open to counseling if you want. But it's all about the facts, telling the stories. And any good cop will tell you, and anybody, that's in the system that understands this, it doesn't take long to figure a person is lying. Truth is self-evident. It's always self-evident. Just give the person a little time, and they'll have a lot of rope to hang themselves with if they're trying to con the people.
Yeah.
So the remedy for the other side is to actually open up a common law court where everyone will be much more better off, where when the truth is discovered, the healing process is applied. Remember, you're in God's court, and God is merciful, okay? That's why mercy must be considered at the end game, and restitution is the primary focus. Not a jail sentence. Restitution is the primary focus. And if you put someone through the process and you require a person to pay the restitution, you steal a man's ox, you got to give him back four. It's a biblical principle, and the whole idea runs around that kind of thinking. So now the person who's supposed to do the right thing tries to take off. Okay, so eventually they capture that person back, and maybe they might go to jail for a few days till they get into the court, blah, 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 blah. Well, look, the remedy is very simple. You still don't have to put this person in jail. You put a ring on their leg. Okay, we got the technology. House arrest. You go out only to work. And as you prove that you're doing the right thing and we feel that you're becoming a better person, well, maybe we'll kind of loosen those reins a little bit. Okay, the people make this decision. This isn't a decision I would make. This isn't anything etched in stone, because that's statutes. Etched not in stone. Well, God's law is etched in stone, so to speak. But we're talking about the people. Every case is unique, and every case is considered by the people, not an elected or an appointed individual, not a political animal, not a public servant, no. One of the people, or a group of the people, shall I say.
Mm-hmm.
That's what common law is all about.
Perfect. Okay, I'll get to the next caller. Area code 828. And John, I have to ask you a question. How are we doing on time? I didn't get your final about how much time you have.
How long do you normally go?
We normally go about 2 hours. We're coming in. We have about 20 minutes to go.
Yeah, that's good. That's
okay.
Good. I'll
okay.
do that.
Good. I just want to make sure I'm not intruding on your time. Area code 828, you're up. Are you awake is the question.
Hey, by the way, maybe you can, when we're done, maybe you can get a copy over to Jan or someone, and we'll post this up on our website, too.
I'll get you both a video and audio. Because I've been also I've been trying to follow your website and show that on screen as you've been talking to get people visuals.
Okay, great.
Okay. And we're going to be going. This is also going to go out to our 25,000 plus YouTube members and over 10,000 free members too, just as the replay goes. So it'll get seen by a lot of people. You just better be ready.
We are poised to take the critical mass at this point. We're waiting for it.
Yeah. Well, good. All right. Area code 828. You're not responding, so I'll get to next caller is Brett. Brett, are you ready? Yeah. Hello. How are you? How you doing?
I'm well. Yourself?
Excellent. You have a question for John?
Yeah, I was just wondering how does the habeas corpus work? How does one fill one out, and where does it have to be filed in the county where the court took place?
Well, it's interesting. Look, a lot of people get confused. Even lawyers get confused, and they're not even sure how to file a habeas corpus or where to file it. And judges try to not have you do that. They try to deter it from happening and so on and so forth. Here's the fact. Here's the inside skinny. Anytime a challenge of habeas corpus takes place, it should be done in a federal court. Why? Because it's a due process. You know, you're being denied your due process in a court of record, and that's why you want to take it into a court of record to begin with. But you need to take it to the federal court because that's their jurisdiction. And, you know, we read in Article 3, let me turn my page here to Article 3 of the Constitution, where it says, the judicial power shall extend in all cases of law and equity arising under this Constitution. That's Article 3, Section 2. The judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution. So if one of your unalienable rights have been violated, I would not go to a state court, a county court, or any other kind of court. I would take it right into the federal district and move it for cause. And the only thing that court hears is one thing and one thing only, and that is the constitutional violation. And if you are being violated your right of due process, then you must be released. Now, when you file, we do have a form layout, instructions, and again, look at it. If you know what you're doing in courts and you got some experience in courts and you can articulate yourself reasonably well and you can write some decent papers and you can work off forms and you know the process, well, then fine. You know, we've got forms that we offer people. You come up to our page, due process, click on that and come on down and you'll get to our form page. And on our form page, we have instructions and forms to move your case for cause. Okay, that's number one. We also have instructions in form to file a habeas corpus. So you don't have to go to move the case for cause. In the process of habeas corpus, you're moving it into federal court for cause. It's a due process cause. So we have all the necessary paperwork, and we have it in both PDF and in Word. We put it in Word, but some people don't have Word, which most people usually should be able to get it, but we also put it in PDF. Everyone can open that. And when you cut and paste out of these things to make your own, take these forms and work off these forms, if you're working off Word, you're pulling all of the footnotes and everything together. If you work off the PDF and you cut and paste, the footnotes doesn't come with it. So you got to go back and cut the footnotes and apply them accordingly. And footnotes are extremely important. It expresses every position and thought concerning the words you're using in this paper. And so we have the petition for the writ of now, if you wanted to for the grand jury to do a habeas corpus for you, then we will do it for you. Again, we ask for a donation of $100 or more. And again, if people really can't afford it, they can talk to Jan and we'll bypass it. Or maybe they're just going to give us $25, whatever. We're not in it for the money, but we need to be supported financially. So anyway, you could do a petition for a writ of habeas corpus, and then there's a notice of habeas corpus petition. There's a cover sheet for this. There's instructions of the habeas corpus itself. These are all forms, the file on demand, the federal cover, the affidavit of service, and an affidavit, which is an idea of how an affidavit is structured. And with all of these forms and papers is everything you need to file it into a federal court, to move your case into federal court for habeas corpus.
So $100, I could get assistance with that as a power of attorney for someone?
Not for $100, for free. Oh. We give it for free, but we ask for a donation of $100 or more. We suggest $100. Some people give us $200, $150. Some people can't afford it, and they give us $50 or $20. Look at the donation, and look at when we look for $100 or $150, it supports all the paperwork, the cost, everything we're doing, and on top of that, it also puts money back into the system so we can continue other things. This is how we support ourselves through donation. We don't have a Rockefeller or anyone supporting us. We were contacted by the Catholic Church, Rome. We were contacted by Rome. Some legal secretary and some people contacted us, and they liked what we were doing, and they wanted to support us financially, and we rejected their money. because we understood when you get to any kind of a big organization, religious or whatever, and they want to come and do something for you, they want something back, and we're not willing to give them anything. So we've been living off the widow's mite. But it would be nice to get someone, if someone had $1 million or 50,000 bucks and gave it to us, that would be fantastic. We're not doing any special favors for that person. That would be fantastic.
But that can, or you, I could be assisted by your, by National.
Absolutely. Everybody. We don't turn anyone down.
Awesome.
But be self-supporting. Take the time to get yourself educated, too. I mean, I know these guys will help you, but I'm sort of big on come prepared. So there's some information. I'm showing you on your page here where you can download these things and read them first, so that if you're going to them, you really won't. I mean, if you, the way I see their, the way the documents are laid out, you should be able to do this yourself, technically speaking.
Correct. Correct.
Okay. It just would be the first time, and I wouldn't want to mess it up if that's
a well. Just first,
if it's the first time, you definitely don't want to do it yourself.
Yeah, absolutely not. But just, but be sure you come prepared. Review, read, prepare, draft. Have it all ready, then come to them prepared, and I think you'll see you'll get things done more efficiently. That's the way I always deal with people too. Be as prepared.
Look, I know some people. I know some people. There are a lot of people out there that are pro se litigants. They've been in court numerous times on numerous things. They've defended themselves. They've been through the school of hard knocks. They know how the court works, and they can be a good lawyer and represent themselves. We give them forms that they've probably never seen before that are powerful, and if they read through them, they'll say, yeah, they'll use our forms, and it'll strengthen their case. But they know what to do, okay? If you don't know what to do, you got to be careful. Look at all these websites out there that try to give you this information and tell you to go into the court and, you know, just say this, that, and the other thing and exercise that, and, you know, you're going to click your heels and be brought into happy land somewhere. You know, it's not going to happen. And in most cases, you're only going to get yourself in trouble. You're going to frustrate the judge. He's going to get pissed off. And he might even try to get you for contempt if you push too hard. And you got to be careful, you know. And, you know, instead of going through all those things, trying to work through the commercial process, the man on the land stuff, and all those things, why not just go to common law, to natural law? Go to God's law, because he's got the remedies to kick butt on all this stuff.
Right on. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brett. Air code 215 looks like to Ronnie.
Hey,
TJ. How's it going?
Hey, it's me, TJ. How are you guys?
Good.
Thank you again for having the call. Thank you, John, for imparting a lot of your knowledge. My question is about the 4490 and the Form 56. As for the Form 56, I'm pretty sure about. It's the Form 4490.
Yeah, I think the 56 is the proof of claim,
fiduciary.
The 4490
fiduciary.
Is fiduciary. Sorry.
Yeah.
Look at what the happened. That's a good, strong one against the IRS particularly, or against the mortgage companies, or against the tax people trying to take, you know, the county trying to take your property. Because in order for them to have power and the authority to seize that property, it's done in a process called in rem, I-N-R-E-M, two words, in rem.
Correct.
And that is the law of C. Where the right of a people, of a country or whatever, you know, you engage into a situation with a pirate ship or something, and you're able to seize the ship, and you tow it to land, and they file two forms. This is the law of the sea, okay? And this is on the federal district court systems when they work in the territories and everything. So they tow the pirate ship to land, and then they file a claim on that ship. And they file fiduciary authority over that ship, which ultimately is giving them the authority to go after the thing and not give due process to the person to get to the thing, which is the law of the land. You see, you have to go through due process to get to the thing on the land. But on the sea, you can go after the thing, and then you wait. As you file the papers, they have 30 days, or maybe it's more than that. Maybe it's 60 days. I doubt it. It's probably 30 days. The pirates can come and say, hey, wait a second, that's my ship. I want to claim it. Well, that's fine, and he'll be put in shackles, and they'll go after him, and they'll probably get the ship anyway. So no pirate's going to come to reclaim his ship back. Well, what they're doing is they've used that, and I've questioned some lawyers on this, and they had no clue on what to even think, do, or say on it. And we talked with the lawyer, how do you collect this stuff? Oh, there's a code here, this, that, and the other. Oh, let me see the code. And you find out in some of these codes in the states for the county operations of taking and seizing properties, they actually have the words, the property is being seized in rem. And I said, that's an interesting thing. What does in rem mean? And you get silence for a while. You get the deer's eyes caught in the headlights, and the answer eventually has to come up, I don't know. They don't know. They don't have a clue. It took me a while to figure out. It's like a code out there with this in rem thing, and it's all about seizing, and it's tied into the fiduciary authority over that property, okay? So you're making that fiduciary claim over the estate, okay? And without those two things, you can't take them. Now, this all takes place on land, and people just don't know about it. Lawyers don't understand it. They don't challenge it. The court proceeds according to the status quo anyway. They would probably, chastise any lawyer that may come in and make waves concerning how the law is, brought into the back room and say, hey, don't bring that up no more. And so you can't win in the system with lawyers on those kind of things. So anyway, I'm not sure whether I answered your question.
My question was going to be, can you use this in other than, can you request the 4490, I should say?
I use it everywhere. Everywhere.
So if you have a state case, are you going to the state clerk to ask if the 4490 was filed in the case?
Well, if there was no due process, then where's the 4490? Where's the Form 56? You know, they'll scratch their head. There is no solution on the state level. And I'm surprised that the state, New York State has done it, and a lot of other states, I'm sure, have done it. I'm surprised that they've kind of adopted this system and brought it into the state, and yet they don't even understand the right process. You see, at that point, you bring it up very, very nonchalantly. They can't respond to it, can't do anything. Now it's time to move it to federal court for cause. You see, but look at every case, all these cases can be removed and brought to federal court for cause because, A, number one, they don't have jurisdiction over you. How do you know if they don't have jurisdiction? Well, if there is a judge sitting up on the bench and he's making a ruling and summary judgments and slapping his hammer and saying this and saying that, he's making all these judgments, you're not in a court of record. If you go into this court and the prosecutor's coming up and they're reading up all these things, all these statutes of violations, the code, regulate, all this stuff, you're not in a court of record. So you challenge jurisdiction, and that's how you get out of that court. And the court must cease and desist and return you back to your original state. But if you move into the federal court, I always go for damages, or tell people to go for damages. And if you're going to go for damages, go for silver dollars. Don't go for the debt dollar. Go for silver dollars, especially in an IRS case. They'll try to come back out after you later and try to, because after all, they own those debt papers. Remember that. Okay? You want a debt paper. You want a silver dollar. Now, 1,000 silver dollars is kind of key. That's kind of what I suggest people to use. Go after $1,000. 1,000 silver dollars for every injury. Maybe there's two or three violations, and you got a conspiracy going there. You got the judge and the prosecutor. That's two people. That's a conspiracy. Maybe there's another person. Maybe there's the president or the CEO of a company that's coming out after your mortgage company's trying to seize your property using a non-judicial foreclosure. Now you got three people in the process. You got the lawyer that's representing the CEO or the corporation. You got the CEO of the corporation. You got the judge. You got three people in a court that you're bringing into the federal court, and maybe you have two injuries. You know, due process, maybe being seized and taken away into jurisdictions unknown, and so on. So right there, they don't have jurisdiction. So maybe you have two injuries. Let's say constitutional injuries. And if you go for $1,000 today is about $18,000. That's a pretty good amount of money. And for each issue, that's twice times 18,000. That's what, 36,000 for each of the individuals. You're up to almost about $100,000. Okay, in restitution damages. You know, you want restitution to begin with. Going to be restored to the original state when they took you on. If you put out money, you know, to a lawyer or something, you want that money back. If they've taken your house, I want my house back. And then injury.
Got you. And I don't want to take up much time because I know there's other people who have questions, but can I go to your website to know, like, how to request? I think, TJ, you talked about how to request the 4490 as well, too.
Yeah, it's nothing. I mean, actually, I've done it. Just recently, I went down to the federal court. I walked into the clerk's office. I said, I need your assistance. I'm just trying to find out if you got certain documents on record regarding either any cases or anything related to my name in this court. And so they went and they searched various different ways. And I said, now if you could just do me one more little favor. I said, would you mind writing down on a letterhead that you looked for these things and that you didn't find it? That's all I wanted. And they wrote me a letter, and they were very happy and very nice about it.
Yeah, I've heard of a couple occasions where they would give you something. Generally, they won't, though. But,
right.
But who cares? You know, look at the fact that you're taking an affidavit and putting into the court stating that it's not there, and they're defrauding
right.
the court. You know, and remember, who can defraud the court? The only one that could defraud the court are the officers of the court. Okay, which really
right.
brings you to the lawyers and the judge. Okay, so that's fraud on the court that they're going through, and they all know the game. And you could show pretty clearly, you know, look, it's not much to take a case and say, hey, look, I'm just going to prove to you that this is not only a conspiracy, this is a huge conspiracy, and it's RICO it's RICO on steroids.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a RICO on steroids, and I can tell you right now, I'll go down to every federal district court in this nation, and there are 94 of them. That would include, of course, the territories. And I'll guarantee you, I'm not going to find one paper, one form 4490, and one form 56 anywhere on any record anywhere in the past 20 years in any federal district court concerning tax courts or certain things of that nature, whatever kind of court it is you're doing, usually tax court. And right there, they're done. That's a huge conspiracy at that point, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. I'm going to definitely check out your website. Thank you again, TJ. Thank you again, John.
I remember, you know, you want to be very, very careful in the courts. You want to be very respectful. You want to give them opportunity to repent and do the right thing and leave you alone. And you just want to go your way. I don't want government on my back. Leave me alone. But also remember, if you find yourself in court and you think you know what you're doing, and you find yourself that you are on the defense, you got a problem.
Yeah.
Never be on the defense. If you can't control that court and keep them on the defense, you got a problem. Now, you know, because they say the lies they say and they try to attack your character or anything, who cares anything about that? That doesn't mean anything. They'll try to do that to rattle your cage, shake you up, and then sneak some things over, upset you, and you don't even know what you're doing half the time because you're getting hung up on all the BS that they're throwing at you. And I believe me, I remember going to court and a lawyer right in the courtroom saying all these evil, terrible, he don't even know me from Adam. Oh, I looked this guy up, he's got cases, he's this, that, and the other thing. And all he did was exaggerate lies. But I don't let it rattle my cage. I don't care. I've learned that that's the game that they play. They play dirty. But I'll focus in and keep them on the defense all the time. That's what you got to do.
I agree with you. I've been there, done that, where they try to shake it up and try to get you defending yourself. And I
can hear what
you called me. Yeah, and that attorney ended up going to jail, who was trying to do it to me. He's in federal prison. But that's a story for another time.
Well, there's another story. All right. Well, thank you, Tarani. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Okay. Talk to you soon.
All right. Bye-bye. I've got time for just one more caller, unfortunately, because there are normal clock here. So, Luann, one quick question, please. Luann?
Hi. Good evening, John and TJ. Can you hear me okay?
How you doing?
Yes.
Yep.
You mentioned, John, about every case needing an affidavit. And I was wondering if you could explain what kind of an affidavit you were talking about.
A sworn statement from someone making the claim of one thing or another. If it's a criminal case, there's got to be a sworn statement from somebody concerning the crime. It could be the coroner that this is a murder and bringing forth the evidence and so on and so forth. That's a sworn statement from it's an affidavit from the coroner. And it may be a murder case, of course, that being the case. If someone sues you, they have to swear to it. If they don't swear to it in an affidavit, then there is no case. Cases, the order of business, the only thing necessary, the United States Supreme Court has ruled this, the only thing necessary for a prima facie case is an affidavit. That's the only thing necessary. Your story on paper sworn to before a notary or a judge or a magistrate, okay? That's the only thing necessary. A police report is not a sworn affidavit. Even though it says I swear under here, no, there's no witness there. It is not a sworn affidavit. Okay?
And that's what you'll find that I can tell you from experience. You'll find that the CID for the IRS, that's what they'll submit.
Yeah, there's no sworn affidavits. None.
Yeah.
No, so what about like on a credit card lawsuit where there's
no sworn affidavits? No, you won't find a sworn affidavit. They will not do it because they'd be perjuring themselves. Okay? And especially mortgages. Mortgages are the biggest thing because, look, the bank has no skin in it. They never gave you the money. It
right.
didn't come from them. They went down to the Fed and got the window and pulled out the money, Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac or whatever the case may be,
right.
and then they brought it, got their couple of points out of the game there, and the next thing you know, they're collecting the money back. They have no business doing that.
Right. So they, like in my case, they provided an affidavit, but they didn't provide like an account number or the original date of the loan. They left off details.
Well, yeah, if you get something, you'll get perjury, then you can go after them not perjury, but you'll get the lies and stuff, and then you can go after them for that, but it's very rare that they do any kind of a sworn affidavit. You got to have someone with absolute direct knowledge, and an accountant, someone running papers or making phone calls or sending out letters, they don't have first-hand knowledge of the situation. They don't
right.
really know anything. They just have a job. They're clerical, crunching numbers and making paper, work. That's it.
Uh-huh.
So, you could beat these cases, especially the credit cards. And a lot of the cases where they're coming out after you for money, usually they've sold it to someone else. So that's, again, it's even further away. They have absolutely no skin in the game at all.
Right. Right. Yeah, well, these attorneys are they're
Very
representing
good.
Themselves as representing the bank, unfortunately. But does the Form 56 and 4490 work on those cases also for the credit card cases? Or?
Well, I don't know that it would work on those. It's whenever they seize a piece of property off you and it's done in rem, in other words, it's done without due process, then that's when you're asking for those papers, okay? So usually it's like tax foreclosures, mortgage foreclosure, you could do it on that, because they're going after property, okay?
Right. Okay.
On a credit card, that's a different story, and there's ways to beat the credit card also, all right? But because they really can't prove nothing. There's nothing that they can prove.
Well, they provide bank statements, and they're trying to say that that's proof. And they're
anything.
Pardon?
You have to have, look, it's got to be certified. You have to have someone with first-hand knowledge to
right.
certify it. If someone swears an affidavit and you get to question that person, you'll find out that they don't have first-hand information. Well, then you perjured yourself, didn't you? Because you came in here and put an affidavit. You don't even have first-hand information. You see, that's the key on that.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's like an investigator that he just gathers information, but he doesn't have first-hand information. He only has information. Information on the papers he gathered. That's all he can say.
And remember, every lawyer out there making positions and points and claims on behalf of their client is all second-hand information. I object. They don't have first-hand knowledge. It represents the verb. Well, let's move it into federal court for cause now because you need first-hand information. You're not giving me due process.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Right.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Luann.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we've reached the end of our clock, John. Went pretty fast. I appreciate all your insights. Great information, great feedback. I'll have plenty of members join up. Any final thoughts before we go?
Well, yeah, you know, look at the liberty is cost time, and if you want liberty, you got to pay for it with your time. So people need to get out there and become knowledgeable, become educated. We need to get an education, a true, real education, an appropriate education, as Jefferson spoke about it, and we need to get it to our children. And we are going to be working on that. I'm writing a book. I'm hoping the book might be available sometime in the fall or early winter, I hope. Once that book is out, I'm going to take that very same book and turn it into a textbook, and we're going to try to push it in as a curriculum in the schools for a real education. I've taken some courses in civics. I've taken some courses in the Constitution, and only one course that really stuck on the Constitution, and that was Michael Bodnarik's courses, which we have them up on our program, on our site also. But other than that, they bored me to tears. I just fall asleep, couldn't keep up. It just bored me, okay? The exciting stuff is going right to the Constitution and looking and reading the words of our founding fathers concerning the Constitution, going and reading the Federalist Papers, you know? And it takes a little time before you want to go through Federalist Papers, but at some point in time, your education should escalate you to a point where you're really capable of doing that. There's a great book out there called The Excellence of the Common Law by Brent Winters, and once people go through our courses, then they would be really in a position to really appreciate that book. And Brent Winters, one of our members made contact with him a while ago and brought him and me together, and we became friends, and he's on our program every Monday night with us, and he teaches us something. Right now he's been working on the Constitution. Prior to that he was doing the Declaration of Independence, and he'll always be teaching us something. So he's every Monday night with us. We have an open forum every Monday, 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight, 3 hours every Monday. We answer questions, we teach something, and we go forward, you know. So, but people need to get educated. If people expect to be ignorant and free, as Thomas Jefferson would say, and I'll add a little bit of my own flavor into, forget about it. It's not going to happen.
That's right. You know, go back to Monday Night Football.
Yep.
Good luck. And see what you get. All right. No, we don't want them to do that. We want them to spend their Monday nights with you. Thanks again, John. I appreciate all of your great...
All right. Thanks for having us. God bless. Godspeed, everyone. And let's get connected and involved.
All right. Thank you. And thanks, everybody, for being here tonight. The recording will be posted on the website and on our channel and other places. We'll send out an email when that's ready. And, of course, John will send that over to your folks as well for the downloads.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
Okay?
Okay.
All right. Everybody, have a great evening and a great week.